Hello and welcome to Virago Voices podcast. Podcast number 7. This podcast is all about women's empowerment. Today's podcast is entitled Emma. I know Emma through a mutual university friend who'll be very chuffed with himself on hearing this podcast. We've never met in person, but we clicked immediately over social media on our love of the outdoors, running, and of course, feminism. My friend Emma is amazing. Her life has been far from linear. Through her years at university, she has faced more adversity than many of us do in a lifetime. Emma achieved a master's from the University of Aberdeen, is a published neuroscientist with her thesis focusing on spinal cord injury and neurodegeneration. Emma is also an advocate of mental health awareness, and through establishing her own running club and running many long distance events, she has shown the powers of physical activity and its positive effects on mental health. From Emma, I have learned strength. Despite every adversity that life has thrown at her, she has overcome and persisted, enduring life's challenges and turning them into her strengths. I hope you enjoy our conversation with the virago that is Emma. Okay, hello Emma, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
It's a pleasure. So this is another virtual podcast. So please excuse the sound quality if it drops out or it's slightly subpar to what it normally is. But I'm so excited to finally speak to you. Emma, let's get started. So what is your life goal?
Oh goodness. So I had to spend quite a long time, because this is such a big question.
Don't start light.
you kind of have like these big life goals, and then you've got shorter term ones. So I did a lot of reflecting on myself and everything. So, but I think the one kind of concrete goal that I came to that I've been really passionate about is kind of challenging people's thoughts and beliefs around what a typical sports person is, or what kind of you have to be to take part in sport. I think especially with body size and gender as well, that's kind of been a big passion project of mine that I've kind of been working through myself, and I've done a lot of personal kind of growth through. It's taken a long time, still working on it. But yeah, I think I just really love to inspire people and to get people to kind of move away from the thought of, well, you know, I'm not the right size for running, or, you know, I'm not an outdoorsy person, or, oh no, that sport's not for me. I kind of want to challenge that and say, well, you know, who really cares at the end of the day? Like, who's going to come at you and say, no, you can't do that? That's really been something that, yeah, I've really been really passionate about, and would really love to get everyone outdoors more and moving more.
Yeah, I really like that. And I really like the kind of, not only the body size aspect, but the gender aspect. And I agree with you. I hate when sports are genderized.
Yeah. I think not so much genderized, but I remember a few months ago I was on Instagram, and my Instagram is like curated with runners, inspirational runners now, which I love.
Yeah, it's great.
But I follow this. He's a run leader in New York, and he's a Nike running athlete. I think he's like classified as like one of the Nike running athletes, or, you know, he was in one of their promotional campaigns once. And he's this guy called, I can't remember his last name, but his first name is Hector, and he runs this running club in New York City, and he is as far as you can get from your traditional male runner. He's like quite overweight, and I think if anyone saw him in the street, they wouldn't automatically say, oh, he must be a runner. But actually, he's run ultramarathons. He has a really successful running club in New York that has, I think, like hundreds of members, has also branched out to different areas in New York. So, yeah, I think it's people like that who just are so inspirational and who need to really have a lot more coverage in places like Instagram and online, and, you know, to kind of come out and, yeah, to challenge the traditional runner that you see on, like, Runner's World, like, the front of the magazine, or, like, in whatever the next promotion is for the next running shoe.
Yeah.
It really has to change quite a lot, I think, for people to think differently about it, because it has to start from there, right? A lot of people have to have that, you know, you have to have that kind of, I don't know, like, inspiration.
Yeah. I think I know you've mentioned kind of more role models in the field, but what other ways do you think we can encourage people to get out and, you know, and just disregard the kind of stereotypical body size and shape and gender of sports and just do them and have fun?
I think that there's a lot to be said for sports and mental health. I mean, the two things, a lot of people, you know, say, you know, like, especially now in COVID, you know, get outside for your walk or your cycle or whatever. But I think the link between sport and mental health and mental well-being is so important. And I mean, that's how I got into running in the first place, and why I still run. I don't run to lose weight. I run because it literally keeps me sane, and it keeps me from going to, like, pretty dark places. And I honestly don't know what I would do without running at this point, which is quite a scary thought, but do you know what, that's, I'm okay with that. I've just really fallen in love with the sport for that reason, and it's why I still run 5 times a week, is because, and it's, don't get me wrong, it's taken a long time to get to that point, but where I, like, can run that much now. But that's how I got into it in the first place, was not for just losing weight and for having this outer appearance of looking like a runner, but I did it because of my mental health, and I've seen a real benefit in that way, and having that as a really big portion of my life.
Yeah. Emma, do you want to just tell us a bit more about how you got into running?
Yeah. So this is, like, my favorite topic. My friends always say to me, but I could talk about this all day long. I'll do a really quick, like, kind of journey through my life. I basically moved to the Netherlands, and I moved to Scotland from the Netherlands, and I was always, didn't really consider myself sporty in high school, especially. I was not sporty at all. Was never into running or I don't know, can't really name any other sports off the top of my mind. I don't know what that says about me. So we moved to Scotland, and we were quite a close-knit family, and I was really, really close to my brother, both my brothers, but especially to my brother James. We were closer in age, and him and I just were really similar, so we got on really well. And then I went to university at 18 to Aberdeen, and 2 years into uni, during the summer, I went on holiday with my best friend to Italy, and we had the most amazing time. But 10 days into our trip, I got a call from my mum, and I don't know how to explain this, but before I answered the call, I had this, like, gut feeling that this was a really important call, and that this was about to change my life, and that something really, really, really bad had happened. And so I answered the call, and my mum told me that my brother James had committed suicide. Quite very suddenly, none of us saw it coming. We were asked quite a lot of times by like by family members, like, oh, did you think that anything was going on? And none of us saw this coming at all. He gave, I mean, you know, no one can ever see anything like that happening. You can never imagine anything like that happening to anyone. But we kind of, especially, he didn't talk to us at all about mental health. We didn't have that conversation. So, I mean, in a matter of seconds, my life kind of changed very, like, drastically. And that was kind of a turning point in my life. I kind of think about things pre and post that phone call. I immediately traveled home back to Scotland. Everything is a bit of a blur, because when you get news like that, your brain just, I don't know what happens, but you just kind of, it's almost like you're kind of phasing through. You're just, your body's moving, but your brain's not actively taking everything in, and you're not paying that much attention. You're just kind of going through the motions. And so I arrived back at home, and we organized the funeral, and my parents were divorced by that point as well, so there was kind of a bit of a thing around that as well. So my dad kind of came back over, and we had a lot of very intense family kind of talks during that time. But yeah, it was a really bizarre time. You don't ever think that at 20 years old you're gonna organize your brother's funeral, but looking back on it, I don't know how I got through it, to be honest. Well, I had a lot of people, really good people around me, for whom I'm very thankful. But yeah, you never really think that your life's going to go down that way. After the funeral, I almost was in denial. I mean, obviously you've got the stages of grief. So I was going through the denial stage, like, hard and fast. Like, I was denying that I needed time off, that I needed to process everything that was going on. I was like, well, that's it. I'm going back to uni. I'm about to start third year. I need to go back. And so I went back to uni, and I remember sitting down with someone, I think a couple of weeks in, and they said to me, I don't know how you're here. I don't know why you're at uni. You need to take time out. And I walked away from that conversation thinking, no, I need to be really strong. I need to get through this. I need to just carry on. I can't stop. I just need to carry on with my life and get on with things. And so I did for a long time. And then one day after I handed in a lab project, it's so weird. I remember where I was. I handed in a lab project having not put any effort into it because I didn't want to. And that's when I decided that I wasn't in the right headspace to be at university, that I had to take the year out, do what I didn't know if I would come back. I had no clue. I just knew that I had to leave uni and be at home and grieve and be with my family. So so that's what I did. I moved home and started a really quite painful process of grieving, where I was at home and
Hello. Sorry, we just had a little bit of technical difficulty. you were at home.
I was at home and kind of properly started the stages of grief. And I mean, so both my mum and I are really similar. We're both kind of project manager focused, want to get through this list. What's the most efficient way that I can get through this? And so that's kind of how I approached grief, was, right, I've got the five stages of grief. I've got to get through them as quickly and as efficiently as I can.
Such a scientist and, approach.
Like, that's not how grief works.
Yeah.
It's not how it works. Like, I'm still grieving 6 years on, and it's, yeah, I just came at it with, like, right, I need to, right, I can tick off, I've done denial, I can take that off the list. I'm probably in betrayal now, or, okay, right, like, that's not how it works. I went home, and I went into, yeah, as I said.
Hello?
Hi.
Hello, sorry.
Hi.
Oh, you're back.
Got it?
Yeah, so you were saying you're ticking off the different stages.
Yeah, ticking off the different stages, and I mean, like, anyone who's kind of been there will say, like, one of the worst things about it is the sleep, the lack of sleep that you get. I mean, I was up until, I would have been probably up till 4, and then didn't, you know, went to sleep, and then I wouldn't be up until the afternoon. And so my whole, what that does to you during the day is just, you can't describe it. You're just, you constantly feel like you're in a, your head is just fuzzy all the time, and I just didn't see a way out of it. If I'm completely honest, I mean, I had people, you know, recommend counselling and all sorts of things to me, but I just was deep in it, and I really didn't see a way out. And went to some really kind of dark places during that time when I was at home, but. Yeah, it was, I don't know, people don't really talk about it an awful lot. And I think that was one thing that I found hard, was I was 20 and had just lost my brother, and I didn't really know what it was like, because I hadn't ever experienced anything like it. And it was quite, I think, quite scary at certain points. I just didn't know what I was, yeah, didn't know a way out, and didn't really see an immediate way out, and didn't really know how to how to get out of it. So so that was for 3 months. I think I was kind of in that really deep state of depression, where I just had no clue what to do. And then I was really lucky. You kind of meet these, I don't know how, you meet these people in life, and you look back on it and you think, I don't know, like, someone was looking out for me, because we were in the right place at the right time, and this is, like, ace, I don't know. So, yeah, the universe, someone, God, someone's looking out for me.
Yeah.
Which was really ace. So I went round to a family friend's house, and they introduced me to their friend, who they had friend for coffee, and she's, like, a really keen runner, and kind of got talking to her. And I mean, I had done a bit of running before, but only to lose weight, and I think as well because I broke up with a boyfriend, and you do that classic thing where you're like, right, I'm gonna lose loads of weight, and I'm gonna, like, really, really sell, and he's gonna regret that he ever did.
I love that.
Wrong way to approach it. But yeah, I hadn't ever taken it seriously before, and so yeah, I was talking to her, and I mean, she was, like, proper, like, she looked really athletic, and I mean, I don't want to say looked athletic, obviously, but I mean, stereotypically, she looked athletic, and she was telling me all about these big runs that she's done before. She said, well, you know, do you fancy going running tomorrow? And I don't know what was going through my mind at this point, but I agreed to it. And then immediately after, like, followed it with, but I'm really bad at running. So, like, I might not be able to run the whole way. I was so nervous as well the next morning, because I didn't want to embarrass myself, and I didn't want her to think that I was a bad runner or whatever. And yeah, I don't know. I just had all these things in my head, and I was like, I don't know how this is going to go. But, I mean, it obviously went well. Next day, we went down to, I was living in a place called Lossiemouth at the time, which is this beautiful coastal town with these, it's got two beaches, and it's just such a beautiful place to live. And we ran down to one of the beaches, and then we walked, like, we walked and ran to the beaches, and then walked a bit of the beach as well. And I think spoke a bit about James as well, and it was just, but I mean, we didn't, like, it was just, if anything, it was just a break from the house, and it was just a chance to get outside and talk to someone else about everything that I was going through. I don't even know how much we actually ran, but it was just really nice to be outside and to be in a change of scenery. So yeah, from there on, kind of with her support and with the support of, like, one of my friends who did a lot of running as well, I started kind of, I think I did the Couch to 5K first of all, and obviously that took, I don't know, I can't remember how long it is, but that took however long, and it was a slow process, but it was so worth it in the end, because having, like, after you run that first 5K, you just feel unstoppable. And I think the one thing that running gave me that nothing else was giving me was just a break from thinking about everything, and a break from it just gave my brain a break from grieving, and I was just focusing purely on moving my legs and focusing on my breathing, which was really nice. And then it was also just a chance to leave the house and to be outside in nature. And yeah, so I slowly started building that up. I have to say as well, I was on antidepressants and sleeping medication as well at the same time. I don't want to kind of make it seem as though running, you know, was the only thing that's like, it's everything together, but the running in conjunction with the medication and then everything that kind of goes along with it was really what helped me during that time. And I mean, I was still grieving, I still am grieving, but I can quite happily say that running literally, like, saved my life. I love it. That's like a very much like a whistle stop tour, but yeah. And ever since then, I still run, like, by, like, I think, yeah, loads, I run a lot. And I don't run, like, competitively. I'm quite a slow runner, but I think, like, just the coolest thing about running is that you know, you can travel anywhere just with your two feet, and that to me is just the coolest thing ever. Explore and be outside and yeah, just enjoy. I mean, Scotland's a beautiful place to run as it is, but yeah that's pretty much,
that's such an amazing story. And I think just the bravery as well of, you know, making that first move and saying, like, yeah, I'll come running with you, because that takes a lot of guts, I think, to be like, I don't run and I'm going to go running with some amazing runner.
I remember, I think during, like, one of the runs that I did with her after, she low-key, like, told me that she'd been at Mount Everest, I think, and it was at a point that I was like, we're four runs in and you've already told me this. There's no going back. but yeah, I really think that, you know, I just want people to know that every runner has been there. Every single person that loves running has, you know, been at that point where you're kind of making the decision to try it out. And running's not for everyone. I'm not going to, you know, try and claim that running is the cure to everything, but I think for a lot of people it does work, and it's just a really, really amazing thing and amazing way to get yourself outside. And I mean, the number of people that I've also met through running, I've made so many friends through it, and one friend in particular I'm thinking of, she and I run on Mondays, and obviously with COVID we've not met up for a while, which but I mean, we would run every Monday and we would catch up. That would be our catch up. Aww. And just that act of, I don't know what it is, you just bond so much over this one sport, and yeah, I just love it. And I wish that yeah, I just hope that lots of people give it a go. And, you know, as I said, it's not for everyone, and that's okay. But yeah, it's just, I know, it's just giving it a shot. And I think things like Couch to 5K and park runs have done such an amazing job to, you know, I don't know, like challenge the thinking around, you know, I'm not a runner. You are a runner if you put one foot in front of the other, and you, you know, you are a runner.
Yeah. Parkrun's amazing, and Couch to 5K is great too.
Yeah, I just love both of them. I could, yeah, just love them. So, yeah, I just hope that it kind of challenges people's thinking around, like, I'm not a runner. Well, you know, everyone's a runner, really. And also just thinking about challenging the thinking around, like, well, why should I run? You know, thinking of it more of like, well, I run because it's, you know, it's good for my anxiety, or it's good for my depression, or it's good for my, I've spent all day at the computer, I need to get out for a bit. Or, you know, it's not necessarily I have to run because I need to lose this amount of weight, or I need to run because I want my life to look better. There's a real, I just think it's, yeah, just a really nice sport.
Yeah, and it's really publicized as such a weight loss sport, isn't it? I hate that.
I know, and I do as well. I mean, that's, as I said, that's how I started running. But I mean, I'm a size 12. I'd be considered like a plus size runner, or maybe not that, but you know, I don't look like a traditional runner, and I've ran quite a lot of distances. So, you know, it's just, you just take it at your own pace, and you just enjoy it for what it is. And yeah,
and I love that kind of like attitude of, you know, it's a break from life, and it's like a chance to focus on your breathing. And I think that like the breathing aspect is amazing.
Yeah. Oh man, it's so good. And I mean, like, I've had a few times, every so often, I mean, I still get runs where I just hate every single second of it, and I curse myself for ever getting into running in the first place. I'm like, why do you do this to yourself every single time? but I mean, I also know that I've been running for 6 years now. I'm yet to regret a run, but the number of runs I've regretted not doing, it's like, I couldn't count it. But yeah, I think the way that I kind of get through those runs where I just hate it so much is that I just focus on my breathing. And
yeah.
It's, I mean, yeah, I think you, like, everyone must find that with their sport, whatever they do.
Yeah, there's definitely, kind of, that needs to be normalized as well.
Yeah. So many things need to be normal.
Like not every day you're going to train amazingly.
No.
And that's so exactly. Fine.
Exactly. I was listening to a podcast the other day that had the global running coach for Nike on it, and he was talking about, he was asked, what is the run that you hated the most? It was something like that. And he was describing this run that he did that was like, I mean, he is a seasoned runner. He is, like, let's just get that clear. He is a mega runner, so his distances are off the charts. So he was doing this, I think it was like a 14-mile run, and he said he hated it the most because he just cursed every single footstep he took. He just cursed at running. He just hated it so much. And then afterwards he says, but actually that's the run that I'm also the most proud of, because I just stuck with it and I just kept on going. And so I think, yeah, like I still get these days where I just hate it, but I mean, I just get through it. And afterwards, yeah, I'm yet to regret doing a run, yet to regret going out. So yeah,
that's so great. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. I think it's just amazing. You're so strong. And yeah, no, I love it. Thank you. Okay, so Emma, for our next question, what would you tell 16-year-old you?
Oh man, this is, again, I had to think really quite hard, and I was like, I haven't revisited 16-year-old Emma that much, but it was actually quite nice, quite pathetic. So 16-year-old me, as we were kind of saying before, 16-year-old's quite a poignant part in your life, isn't it?
Cause it's massively.
You start thinking about, right, what's my next move, and things. So 16-year-old me, I mean, I'm still working a lot through this, but when I was 16, I cared so much about what other people thought of me, almost to the point where I didn't do certain things because I was just worried that people would maybe think I was weird or different, or, you know, I kind of tried to fit in as well as I could. So yeah, like a good example is that I barely did sports when I was 16 because I just didn't, I don't know, I just always felt like I was the larger girl. And when I look back at pictures of me, I mean, I was like average. Like, I wasn't, you know, you kind of build a picture in your head of what you think you look like, but looking back on it, I don't know where that came from, which is, I think, in itself quite scary and kind of says a lot for, you know, everything that you say to a teenage girl, she really does take on, and she really kind of runs with it.
Massively.
So, yeah, I mean, I had, like, when I was growing up, I had a few things, like, a few quite kind of, I would say, emotionally, like, destructive relationships, well, not relationships, like, family relationships and things that were really, yeah, very, very bad for my body image. And so when I was 16, I was so self-conscious of what I looked like, and yeah, always thought that I had to lose weight. And you know, you kind of have this perpetual, like, oh, I always need to lose weight, I just need to, as long if I you know, weighed this much, then I'm worthy, and then I have value, and then I can start doing the things I want to do. But yeah, when I was 16, I was really struggling with that, and I wanted to be liked by everyone. So I mean, I tried my best to be friends with everyone, and didn't really want to challenge anyone, and just tried my best to fit in. And yeah, I thought that other people thought that I was the like the large one, or that I was like the large one in the group. And so yeah, because of that, I didn't do a lot of things, and I think I was really quite scared of doing a lot of things, which is really sad.
Yeah.
I think if I were to meet 16-year-old me, I would have a really, I just want to give her a hug, because you go through so much stuff mentally, and you know, you have so many social pressures, and that I really struggled with at that time.
It's such a hard time, even like hormonally. I mean, your body's changing so much as well as all everything else changing, and
yeah.
That's that pressure on top of, you know, how you feel is changing, is massive.
Yeah, and you just have so many things going on. Like, never mind, just, well, you've got to kind of decide. I mean, at 16, you think that what you do at university is what you're going to do for the rest of your life, which, I mean, spoiler alert, I did biochemistry and I'm not doing biochemistry now. But yeah, I just put so much pressure on myself to choose the right thing, and to you know, I mean, yeah, I think a lot of teenage girls still go through that, especially with, I mean, thank God social media wasn't as big as it wasn't as big a thing when I was in high school as it is now.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, I'm 26 and I have TikTok. It's not a big deal. But when I'm on TikTok, some of the stuff I see, I'm like, if I was 16 and seeing this, the stuff this would do to my mental health, I really don't know. I would really, really struggle.
Yeah.
And I would really struggle as well to know that that's not a realistic way to look, that you don't have to, you know, have a really hurt bum, and that you don't have to have a thigh gap to want to go to university to do the thing that you want to do. But when I was 16, like, you know, that stuff was really important to me, to be liked by everyone, and to, you know, I don't know. Oh.
And it's such a shame that that kind of, you know, those societal pressures. I think we really grew up in a generation where weight loss was pushed so heavily. And I think that almost takes away from everything else that you try to do. And, like, working hard in school is hindered by the fact that you're like, oh, gosh, you know, I need to lose weight and I need to look like this. And, oh, school's secondary to all of that.
Massively, yeah. I mean, to say, like, you know, I still remember comments that were made to me, and I remember, like, where I was, what I was doing, and, you know, I remember just the fact that I remember them so vividly kind of speaks for itself, you know, what that does to someone. I mean, as well, like, I really struggled. I had really bad acne when I was in high school, and ended up kind of going on Reaccutane for it, but before I kind of had it, you know, before it cleared up, that was a really, really big, you know, I had such a big confidence struggle with my skin, because I was wearing these layers of makeup to try and cover it up, because I just felt so embarrassed by it. I think, I don't know, I would, 16-year-old me was quite insecure. I didn't really know who I was or what I wanted to do, and also just cared so much about what other people thought of me, which I'm not really friends with those people anymore, and I kind of have moved on. So, you know, yeah, it's hard. Being 16 is really hard.
It is. And do you have any advice to girls that potentially, you know, might be in the same position that you find yourself in at 16?
I think find your group that you genuinely would consider like an extended family, and if you don't have that, that's okay. You're not going to be friends with the same people. You don't have to be friends with the same people for the rest of your life. Whether you meet them in university, I mean, yeah, I'm very lucky to say that I had a really close knit group of friends who I consider extended family, but I met them in university and I didn't know them before then. So if you feel as though you don't fit in with the people that you have around you now, that's okay. It's not, these friends might not be your friends for life, and that in itself is completely okay. And as well, if you're a bit older and you're not friends with those people anymore, that's what, that, like, you don't have to feel bad about it. A lot of people do still have friends from high school or childhood friends, or, you know, friends that they met when they were babies, and that's also fine. But if you're not, that's also okay.
And I think that's important as well, you know, people that, I like the phrase extended family, because almost the people you do keep in contact with are your extended family, and, you know, it's all right not to keep in touch with people that you don't feel add anything or make you feel terrible about yourself.
But that's a really difficult lesson to learn as well. It's really hard to kind of say to yourself, actually, I don't really want to be friends with you. And yeah, it's hard, but it's, you know, it's worth learning it, I think, earlier. And I think it was on a podcast. We love our podcast.
We do. think,
we were talking about this earlier, about Pandora Sykes and Dolly Alderton. And that was like one of the questions that they had on their episode one week was, I'm not friends with my high school friends anymore, and I feel really bad about it. And I mean, this is quite a new revelation, I think, that I've come to recently. So, I mean, again, it doesn't happen overnight, but they kind of spoke about how that's okay. You don't have to, you know, that's perfectly fine. And again, it took me a long time to kind of learn that, and unfortunately a lot of life events as well, to learn that not everyone's going to have your back.
Mm.
And to kind of to draw yourself some lines is okay. It's you're protecting yourself at the end of the day, and that's the person you have to really protect the most.
Exactly.
Because care of yourself, who's going to take care of you?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really hard. It's really, really hard. I'm still not good at it, but it's hard. Yeah.
And sometimes people just come into your life, like you were saying, with the girl that introduced you to running. You know, they come into your life at the right point and lead you in a direction, and then they leave again, and that's completely fine as well.
Exactly. I don't really talk to her anymore, but again, that's okay.
She's had such an impact.
Massively. And again, there are people who are there for the long run, mm-hmm. and they're there for the short term, and that's I think that's quite a big lesson that you kind of learn in your 20s, is that you know, that's okay. And that, yeah, you meet people at the right time, and then you meet other people at the right time. But yeah, it's kind of recognizing that as well, and that they don't have to stay around for forever.
Yeah. I think that, yeah, it's a really important lesson, actually. I like that. Sometimes
still working.
Pardon?
I'm still working on it.
Yeah, it's a constant process, isn't it?
Yeah.
And for my final question, any last thoughts to 16-year-old you before I move on?
I think I've covered it.
I like that. That was a good answer. So my personal favorite question. So what does being a woman mean to you?
You ask such good questions.
I try.
So this word, I think, came again. All my stories have always got to refer back to running, but I was on a run once and I was talking to my friend about something that was going on in my life, and that I was finding it really hard, but it was something that had taken, it's still going on, but it has taken years to come to any kind of fruition. And the word that we came up with that we've got to keep at the front of our mind is integrity. And I just loved that word so much. So I think that's like, being a woman to me is integrity. But then also I've thrown in perseverance there as well, because I think those two, for me, the women that I've been very fortunate to have in my life have just lived by those two words, and have really kind of shown me, you know, what integrity and perseverance can really do. I mean, the person I think of first and foremost, and I'm sure everyone thinks of this person all the time, but is their mom. So my mom is just my biggest inspiration, really, for being a woman. She's a very senior businesswoman. She's very successful, but she also just loves her work, and she's a real people person. She just loves working with, she works in like healthcare, and she just loves working with patients and consultants. And yeah, she just has such a love for her role. But she's worked in quite big companies and has been had quite senior roles since I mean, I hope she doesn't listen back to this and think that I've got this timeline completely wrong. But I took a guess. Since like the 80s, she's been in really senior roles amongst some very powerful men. So, I mean, for her to have gone through a time like that and to have been someone, you know, a lot of men's boss, I mean, you have a bit of integrity in you and a bit of, you know, perseverance, and you know, have that real drive to do your best job, and to not show that you're intimidated, or to not be intimidated, or not to show that you're intimidated by men. And I think in business, it's one of the kind of the biggest challenges, and especially when you get to the more senior roles, it's definitely such a big, it's such a big year that my mum's just been really, has really kind of inspired me for.
That's amazing. I love, you know, your mum is your first female role model in your life. And I love that she's, you know, been such a big inspiration to you. And that's amazing. Oh my gosh. Working in business.
Honestly, she's such a badass. I hope you say that.
I love it.
But she really is. I mean, as I mentioned, like my parents are divorced, and I've never been very close to my dad, so he's not very present in my life. But my mum has always had, she's always, you know, had our back. She's always been there. She's always supported us through anything we wanted to do. And she's just been the most amazing woman, like, ever. And I'm sure everyone can say that about their own mum. But, I mean, my mum is really, she really is. And as well as just, you know, holding a household, and especially everything with my brother, that was, you know, such an intense time and really very, very challenging for family dynamics. I mean, she had a role as a mother to, you know, to comfort us through grief, but then she was also grieving herself.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to get through that, well, not to get through it, but indicating that there's an end point, there's not. But, I mean, to work through it and to be there for us, but then also to work through everything herself, you know, she's just amazing. So and then I mean in addition to my mum, I've been really lucky to have I've got this group of women who it's like my mum and my auntie and my mum's best friends, and I'm kind of in their group as well. But yeah. It's so nice. It's like I'm around all these really inspirational women who all have very different roles and who are from very different backgrounds, but they've all shown so much just stamina and have just really shown a drive for whatever they are passionate about, and yeah. have never really stopped to consider, you know, oh, I'm a woman, so I can't do that. Like, none of them have done that. They've just gotten with it, and they just do it, and they still do it, and they're just amazing. So yeah, I've been very lucky to be around some really amazing women, and constantly looking up to them. So yeah. Oh.
That's so great though, and it's so nice that you can be surrounded by such inspirational women, and they all sound so strong as well.
Especially kind of in all sorts of different, I mean, you must find it in medicine, you know, women will have a different role, and, you know, you'll have different reasons for why women are inspirational there. And then in business as well, I think there's, you know, women kind of have a different, but similar challenges.
And like we were saying before we started recording, you know, women, we all face the same struggle. I mean, we all face sexism every single day. And it's all, it comes in so many different forms. And I think just like the thing you were saying, perseverance and persevering through that is just incredible. And I mean, it has got better, but, you know, it's still not where it should be.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. And I think that's definitely something, like a message for young girls these days. I mean, I see it. I mean, I think this generation are the most amazing. I mean, especially with the, you know, the A-level grades and everything coming out, that they just got out and protested, and just the fact that they're saying no, actually, that's not okay.
Yeah,
I think it's just showing a real awareness of what's right and what's not right. But yeah. I agree, there's still so much work to be done, and I think that if we can look to these little nuggets of knowledge in women that we have around us today, I think that would just be really ace.
Yeah. So, yeah. And using people as role models, I think, is really important. You know, seeing how other women do things, because, you know, you can only do what you've seen. And if you don't see people in positions that you're wanting to gun for, then you know, it's demoralizing. You're like, oh, I don't think I can do that because there's no other one that looks like me there.
It's so true. It is so true. And I mean, hopefully as well, like, again, not to stem everything back to running, but it's the same thing. And it's, yeah, it's the same thing where until you see someone who looks a bit more like you doing that, then, you know, it's, yeah, I don't know, it's just having that representation out there, and especially kind of in like in these different settings that we all find ourselves in, whether that is in medicine or in sport or in business or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. And there is something really nice about being in a room that, you know, it's full of men, but there's only a few women, and you kind of all look at each other, and I don't know, I just always feel a kind of sisterhood.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's so true. It's so true. My mum and her best friend, they met each other at work, like their jobs in the back in the Netherlands when we used to live there. So I think they've definitely found a real sisterhood and have supported each other and still call each other for, like, you know, business advice and things. And I mean, they're both in different roles now, but they had a real sisterhood and a real kind of recognition of some of the struggles that you might find yourself in as a woman in business. Yeah. So yeah, to have that kind of, yeah, sisterhood with someone else who probably going through a very similar thing, I think is just so important.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're so right. We're living in such an exciting time, and I think we'll look back on this in the future and tell our, like, future generations that, you know, we lived through this time, and I think it will be revolutionary.
Yeah. I honestly think this generation are just, they're just, I mean, the word woke comes to mind, and I really don't want to be that that person who really should not use the word like that, but it's the only word that I can think of that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I mean, they really are, and I think the fact that they're standing up for stuff that is, that, you know, they recognize that isn't right, is just really amazing, and I think we can all learn a lot from them.
Yeah. And that's integrity you were talking about as well.
Yeah, no, I think I'm really excited, and I have a lot of hope for things to come. So yeah, we all have to put in the work, and
yeah. Oh, that's such a positive and hopeful note to end on. I love it.
I love it.
Well, any last words? Anything you wanna? Anything? I don't know where I was going with that. anything you think we've missed?
No, I think I've covered everything. I'm just really hopeful, and I'm just really excited for things to come, and everyone should go and sign up to Couch to 5K and give it a go.
Good plug. Are you on commission?
Well.
Well, I'm sitting here smiling, so that's a good way to end a podcast. Thank you so much for speaking to me, and thank you so much for opening up and sharing your story. I think it was absolutely amazing. I'm sure I speak for everyone who's listening, that you're a very, very inspirational woman. So thank you so much for that, and thank you for being on the podcast.
I love this podcast. Love it.
I'll give you permission. but yeah, thank you so much. And I hope you've all enjoyed listening to the virago that is Emma.